This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Richard Balfour Lynn. How are you, Richard?
Fine, thanks. Well,
excellent. You're the owner of Balfour?
Yes, the Balfour Brut Rosé is my label. And yep. Obviously I grow it and make it.
Okay, excellent. I only really noticed it about 2 years ago at one of the English wine trade tastings, actually where we are now. But I hadn't really heard much about you guys beforehand. When did you start making wine and how did you get into it?
Well, my interest in wine started when I was early in my days in business. And I decided that I took the view that I played a lot of sports, but that might sort of come to an end as I got older. But my wine drinking would probably continue for a long time.
And so, improve with age.
Improve with age. I thought, it's something I can always do. I think I'd better learn something about it. So I went to the Wine and Spirit Education Trust and applied to do the certificate. Mm-hmm. And they wrote back to me saying, well, we're terribly sorry. You can't come on the certificate course, the 1 year course, because you're not in the wine industry.
That was quite a while ago.
A long time ago. So I then, many years ago. So I then formed a wine company called Sedgwick Wines and wrote to them saying we'd like to enroll Richard Balfour in on behalf of Sedgwick Wines. And of course, I was immediately accepted on the course. I hadn't actually done anything with this company. I just formed the name. And I did that for a year. And then I did the diploma a year later and became more and more interested in wines. And when I came out of that, I started buying wines and actually did then make Sedgwick Wines happen. I'd got a couple of students who'd been on the course who clearly knew a lot more than myself, and we started going all over the world buying wines and selling it to corporate businesses throughout the UK. And that went on for a number of years, and I became more and more interested in wines because the great thing about buying and selling was that you were invited to these fabulous dinners with fabulous wines, you know. And I said, this is a great, you know, this is completely unlike my normal day job. This is such fun. And then a couple of recessions came along and I had to go back to doing my real job. And so I stopped the wine business.
What's your real job?
Well, my business spans property development, but today it's mainly hotels like Malmaison, Hotel du Vin, the De Vere hotels, Village hotels, so a range of different hotels and a number of restaurant groups, things like Circe. So it's one of our businesses where we do the catering, the Royal Opera House, National Portrait Gallery. We've got the restaurant on the top of the Gherkin. And indeed, now we run champagne bars. So we just opened one at Westfield Shopping Centre about a month ago. And the longest champagne bar in the world, as we call it, at St. Pancras Station.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we're into those and we're into drinks as well. We own a business called Greenall, which makes things like Bombay Sapphire, which is quite a big gin brand.
Yep,
We make vodka. We make about 150 million bottles of gin and vodka a year, sold all over the world. So it's a sort of range of businesses in the leisure sector, health clubs, et cetera, et cetera. So that's my interest. And I'm fortunate enough to escape out of London at weekends, and I have a farm down in Kent and fruit growing down there. Mm-hmm. And I've always said to myself and to my wife and bored everybody to death that one day I'm going to have a vineyard in France or Italy or somewhere. And my wife said, you know, why don't you actually plant it in Kent? Mm-hmm. This was in 2002. So I actually contacted Stephen Skelton. I didn't know anything about this subject. So I contacted Stephen Skelton, who's the English master of wine and an expert on English wines, and asked him to come down. Showed him all the land, and he said, well, this land is absolutely perfect for vines. What do you want to grow? I said, it's really simple. I want to make pink sparkling.
Why pink sparkling?
Because it's fun. I like drinking it. My wife likes drinking it. And it's a party drink. It's a fun drink. It makes people smile.
Yep.
It's a celebration. And I wanted to create a boutique brand, if you like, that was distinctive. And I think that a lot of the pink champagnes that are made are frankly overrated. And I'm not convinced, that sounds terribly arrogant, that a lot of the French make great pink champagne. And I've always thought that Laurent Perrier, for example, which is what I'd used to drink, was not as good as it, you know, I was always slightly disappointed. And there were one or two that I aspired to, like Billy Carr Salmon Rosé, and there were numbers which I thought were fabulous. And I said, you know, that's what I'd like to try and do. And try and understand, it's a different taste. It's, you know, what am I looking for? Color's very important. I have a very sort of old English pale pink, sort of ivory, pale color is my color. I'm looking for a young, fresh drink. And I knew the sort of taste I wanted. And I thought, and it's been my philosophy to business, do one thing well. You know, become the best in your area rather than just try and do lots of things generally.
Yep.
So I said to Stephen I wanted to plant Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Pinot Meunier. And this was just ahead of when everybody started doing it. There were people starting to, but it was quite early in that move, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was very enthusiastic about it, and we got the grapes and we planted them. And in 2002, we planted, and you never know with the microclimate how it's actually going to turn out at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure.
But we made 2003 in England was incredibly hot summer. And we got some grapes in our second year, and we made 1,000 bottles just for myself.
On your second year, that's pretty good going, because most people leave at three.
It was purely for myself, so it wasn't a commercial venture. And I, on Christmas Day, I had all my family down in Kent, and it was one of those very hot, sort of clear blue skies. And we sat out over the vineyard, and we said, "Let's try it." You know, it's only been in the bottle a short time, but let's see what we're doing here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so exciting to actually drink. But it could have been great. It could have been terrible. Either way, I'd have loved the whole thing. It was just so exciting. It was an exciting moment, you know.
Yep.
But actually, it did taste like it had real potential. And a lot of people tasted it and said, look, this really does have potential. So our first vintage, actually, was the 2004. And we launched that 2 years ago. And it seems to have got huge recognition. It won the gold and the trophy in the International Wine Challenge last year, which is an incredible recognition for it. And I think the part of it is not simply the taste, but it's also the packaging, the look, the branding, and everything sits around it. I was given some very, very good advice.
Not the IWC, it's all blind bagged.
No, but in terms of winning competitions, in terms of selling it and people tasting it and drinking it.
Yep.
I think what's very important is that although we don't call it champagne, it has to compete with any of the top champagne houses in terms of its brand presentation.
Yeah. I've noticed you always use a copper bucket as a presentation, which sort of highlights the color nicely.
But if you look, we use copper. I mean, we actually, our labels are made with a copper, and actually our foils are also copper. So copper is our color, and that's the color we, you know, again, I think it's very important to own a color with a brand. Mm. And that's effectively our brand. And we, those copper ice buckets are fun. In one of my hotels, we had a very small company make copper baths and copper basins. And they were fantastic. I mean, beautiful. I mean, handcrafted, fabulous things. So I said to them, look, can you make copper ice buckets? And they said, well, we've never done that before, but why don't we? And that's what I've done. And they're in the bars and on the bars and on the restaurants where it's sold. And again, it's a point of distinction.
Sure. Is your wine sold in all your bars and restaurants? And
some of them.
I thought you'd be pretty easy to get them in.
No. Of course, it's easy to get them in. It's not easy always to get people to drink it. So, I mean, like any situation, we allow our sommeliers and our wine bars to decide what they want to sell. Frankly, we are running a business, and in some of them it's appropriate, in some of the places it's inappropriate. It's not the right price level or the right target audience or whoever it happens to be.
Sure.
But it is in it's in M&S. Didn't brand it as M&S, so it's branded under the Balfour look. Sells there at £35, so it's expensive in terms of pricing. It's deliberately so. We are going to Waitrose fairly shortly, and that's probably the only sort of retail outlets that we want to go. So it's a limited amount. We only make a small amount. We're making about 15,000 to 20,000 bottles at the moment. With new vineyards that we've planted, it will get up to about 100,000 bottles in about 5 years. Time.
Is that for sale?
And that's a maximum. I don't want to go above that. It's very much, it's not a business, it's a passion. And that's the right amount to keep it fun and a passion rather than turn it into a business.
Sure. Okay, interesting. How many acres have you got, or hectares?
Well, I've got, my farm down there has 400 acres, and we will have planted about 30 acres of vines eventually.
Well, it's not too bad, is it? And where is it? It's in Kent.
It's in Kent. It's about 10 miles south of Maidstone, Cranbrook, Sissinghurst, Goudhurst, Marden area. That's the sort of the area. So I mean, it really is the most beautiful part of England. It's really the garden of
Kent's
just fabulous. And it's a great fruit growing area. So grapes, obviously. I mean, at the end of the day, people forget it's terribly simple. The better the quality of the grape, the greater the drink you're going to get at the other end.
Yeah, potentially. You can still make a hash of it.
You can certainly make a hash of it. That's also true.
And who's your winemaker? Do you make it yourself?
No, at the moment we're working with Owen Elias, who we rate very highly at Chapel Down.
Yep,
and Chapel Down are making it for us.
Mm-hmm.
We just applied for planning permission to build our own winery, which we would hope to do in the next few years.
Yep.
And then obviously we'll make it, you know, within our own site.
Will you add restaurants and all that sort of stuff?
No,
or you're just looking to...
No, this is just for private. For me to sit in my dotage, I rather thought, which has been slightly delayed due to the economy.
Yeah, you're in property, so it's not a good time to be property.
No, indeed.
What is the future? You're obviously going to increase your volume to 100,000 bottles. Do you see it as an export product, or do you a niche export product, or do you see it as something you want to keep within the UK market?
No, I think there's been a huge interest in the world in English brands. We've seen a renaissance in English brands in a whole range of industries, fashion, for example, with Burberry, and a whole range of English brands. And now there's a definite renaissance on brand England, if you like. And there is equally interest in English food and drink and particularly English sparkling.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the great advantages that England has over the new world for sparkling is a cooler climate. You do need a cooler climate to get that acidity and freshness that's so critical. And I think the new world struggles because of the warmth and the high potential sugar and alcohol within the wines are slightly heavier. And I think their sparkling wines suffer by comparison. So I think it's one of the real opportunities for Southern England. And I think, therefore, there is interest, I think there is interest from a number of niche markets. But again, it would be a small amount because we're only making a small amount.
And you're still trying to position it as a very high-end product in those niche markets.
It'd be fun if it was in some of the style bars in New York. You know, we've been approached by some Russian distributors who want to put in some of the bars in Moscow. So I can see that it's those sort of upper-end echelon specific amounts, but small amounts.
Okay, then I think we'll wrap it up there, Richard. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.